how do we do this stuff and live in the normal world with all those weird people and our weird minds? So these are kind of like tips. Try this, try this. Not really in any order of preference, but all useful. Probably at the top of the list. Sit every day. Sit every day. Do not judge the quality of what happens when you sit, but sit anyway. Tush to the cush. That's too easy to cop out. Just stay anyway. Because even if you're having, quote unquote, as Carmen is saying, a bad sitting, I just answered that. There's lots of opportunities to even just notice it subside for a moment and get some clarity. And so you're condemning the whole sit by saying it's a bad sit, I'm giving up on it, when actually it's moment by moment by moment. Some of those moments will be really helpful. You know, some of those moments you'll, for instance, learn to tolerate being squirmy, and then it'll pass, you know. For instance, so yeah.
So you can't kind of build on negative energy?
Sometimes you can. You can. You'll watch and see. But it doesn't mean to say it's inevitable, you know, and so the whole thing's a waste of time, not necessarily. And that bad sitting, quote unquote, is no worse than not sitting, where you're actually building on negative energy because you're not actually being mindful. So if there's an opportunity of even being a few times mindful in a sitting compared to not sitting and not being mindful, I would go for the sitting every time because we're trying to practice being more mindful. So don't kid yourself. That's a cop-out. So sit every day. Best way is to have some, for most people, find. Few of us are creative enough to just be spontaneously sitting every day. So find a place, a time that actually works. And somebody earlier asked that question. Most people find it's better in the morning. It's easier to actually find that time because the day sort of nibbles away our available energy and time. If you can, 20 minutes is a great, 20, 25, 30. You've been sitting now, you know, between 30 and 40 minute periods. The first few minutes, you're not really here. It takes a while to get settled. It just does. And so, or to wake up if it's early in the morning and stuff. So, you know, then give yourself a good few. This is a tip for how you actually conduct yourself in that period of time, 20 minutes, whatever. Take a few minutes to inspire yourself when you first sit down. And this is another piece that I think really helps. Don't just sit, have a regular time, but have a regular place and make a nice little spot and put something in there that you like. I have an altar, an eight-sided altar. I have the four directions. I have little thingamies. I have little crystals and all the hippie things, you know. Mm-hmm. And I have a bone from a piece of vertebra from a beluga whale from the Arctic that's white in the north, you know. And I have a feather from a stone circle from Wales, which is in the west, where I was in England, and which is air, and I light incense. And I do a little play with the little, you know, I have a little lovely Buddha, and I light a red candle in the south, which is love and red and joy, and I have a little, you know, I put flowers in that one in the summer, and then in the west I have a little blue pot of the ocean water surrounded by seashells from the west coast, when I was on the west coast of Wiccaninish Island, off the west coast of Vancouver Island, off the west coast of Vancouver, of Canada, and that's my west. And I, you know, and I have little, you know, a little heart that my son gave me when he was very young that he found, a little piece of, you know, carved rock, and gems which mean something to me. And I do that, and I get into the mode of being in a spiritual inspired state. I don't just go plonk, breathe in, breathe out. I kind of bring my heart there somehow. It's really nice to read a poem or something, or take 5 minutes, read something, just to kind of get you all there and get your heart into it, whatever. Or just to, as I said at the beginning of this last sitting, just kind of appreciate yourself that you actually, this is important stuff. This matters. This is about your whole life. This is about your relationships and your peace of mind and how you handle illness and death, for goodness sake. It's important. And so talk yourself into being really there fully in whatever way. So take a few minutes for that piece so you're 100% up for this, which is motivation and helps you do it. then do the period of time when you're doing your being with your breath, being with your body, exactly in the way that I've said. And you can go slowly and just take a while to feel your environment and feel your seat and then your spine, and then go through where can you relax. So you can be busy doing all this. This is all meditation. It's all great. And then be with, settle down, be with your breath, the beating of your heart, whatever. I often have a cup of tea, stoke the fire, feed the cat, and walk up and down doing walking meditation while that's all happening before I sit. It wakes me up. I've washed my face. I've cleaned my teeth. I've had a pee. The fire is warming the house. I'm drinking my tea. It's on the dining room table. I'm walking up and down several times and sipping my tea. Then I can turn the fire from being full on to down a bit. Then I go and sit. That's a good 10, 15 minutes of getting there. So we, you know, it's all meditation. It's all great. Then be with your meditation. Decide before how long you're going to sit. Be realistic about what do you have today. And say, okay, today I have 25 minutes. Right. Take your little thingamy, whatever timer you have. Set it for 25 minutes. Or you can do your app on your cell phone. You can get your lovely Zen gong, whatever you have, you know. And stick it underneath your blanket and don't look at it. And leave it alone and don't get up until it goes bing or whatever it does. Otherwise, you're spending half the time bargaining. Is this long enough? Is this long enough? Shall I get up yet? Is this good enough? And that's not meditating. So set, be realistic. Okay, 10 minutes today, right? Okay, 10 minutes. I can do that, fully do that. Okay. Then at the end, the last few minutes, when the bing has gone off, maybe even before if you've been patient or whatever, spend a few minutes. Sort of, you could be reflecting. Like this is sort of like the beginning is the same thing. It's like, this is what I want to be like in my life. I want to be present for my life. Something like that. Or appreciate yourself. You know, it's like, yay, this is good. It's like at the end of a yoga session, you don't leap up and run off. You actually sort of settle with it and you feel like, look, I feel my body, it's all loose now and it's steady and I can just settle with that. So just appreciate it. And or send some well wishes either to yourself or to, you know, your friend is in hospital today. Okay, can you be okay? Like, use the quiet, clear state that you're in, and even if it's not that quiet and clear, but nevertheless, to actually send some well wishes in the world. Just to reflect, this world is full of struggle as well as beauty, and I want more of the beauty and less of the struggle, so that's why I'm here. Some kind of closing heart thing, so it isn't just over because the bell rings and up you jump. But some kind of meaningful ending to the time. It just makes it, it holds it in respect. Basically, that's my advice. That's one thing. Another thing is to do this practice all by yourself, living in the world as a lay person, it's almost impossible. It's impossible. The Buddha said it was impossible. We need the support of other people. So even if it's once a week you sit with somebody else, or you join a sitting group, or you listen to someone talking, or you read some author's wise words, or something else, don't expect you to have enough resources to keep it going when the rest of the world is into exploitation and consumption and judgment and all the rest of it that's going on outside. Our society is not based on ethical values on the whole, and so on. And so we need right company, and we need input from other people. So buddies, go walk with some other Dharma. You don't have to be always talking deep meditation topics, but be around people whose intention is to be kinder, more careful, more conscious, more wise. We need the support of each other. Sangha, it's called. It's absolutely essential. In Victoria, there's a sitting group open to anybody on a Sunday night at Helga Meyer's yoga studio on Shakespeare and Bay at 7 o'clock every Sunday night. Anyone is welcome. And there are other sitting groups around town. I'm going to come to resources in just a minute, so I'm going to move and come to that later because I've got other things to say. Books and so on. None of us have ever been able to do this by ourselves, no question, except the Buddha. And even he had buddies who were all not eating food and sitting under Bodhi trees. Then there's a bunch of S words which are really, really helpful. Slow down whenever you can. Just walk slowly sometimes. Just be slow instead of rushing to the car. Just do things in your house slowly. It's extraordinary how much consciousness is revealed just when you just deliberately slow down. we tend to be speedy and fill up every spare moment with another thing, another conversation, quick trip to the fridge, turn up the TV. We're filling up. So space, slow space. We get more conscious. Silence. Moments of silence in your life. Don't turn the radio on now. Don't wire yourself all the time to your iPod. Take some silence sometimes, heaven's sake. Eat a meal in silence every so often. It'll taste 10 times better because you're actually there for it, you know, instead of in the conversation. So silent, periods of silence and periods of solitude. Just be with yourself. Be silently with yourself. We don't do that enough either. And you don't have to be doing anything fancy. I have a cup of tea in the afternoon, watch the birds. I'm just silent and with myself. It's lovely. We settle when we're silent and slow in solitude, all these S words. We're more conscious. It's great. Walk by yourself sometimes. Go to nature. It's silent. It's calming. It's beautiful. We need that kind of energy because to try and compete with all the busy stresses and huge responsibilities, there's no way. So if we make those kind of spaces, we're already 90% conscious. We already know all that, I'm sure. Actually take the opportunity, not just go slower and make more space, but every so often completely stop whatever it is you're doing. Like stop it, stop. I mean, don't just stop if you're on the highway, you know, but... we just don't, like, it's really quite fun. It's like you're going to do this and you're going to do this and then you're on the next thing and you keep going. Stop completely. See what happens. You just get so present right away. You say, God, I was just lost in doing and then, oh, right. And sometimes you have to stop because the world outside has stopped. The light is red in your car. So don't then turn up the radio or grab the phone or count when's it turning orange, you know, just like stop, be stopped. Or you're in a waiting room or a lineup at the thrifties, you know. You don't have to be always wishing the person in front of you would hurry up and get their groceries through so you can get on with yours. Just stand there. There's tons of those moments already in our lives, but we miss them. It's all subtle. And so we go for the big and the dramatic and the juicy and the irritating. We miss all these little quiet opportunities to just calm down and be present. We can be much easier present in all those little moments than in the times when we're like thoroughly engaged and it's exciting or argumentative or stimulating. It's harder to be present then. But if we make the most of the in-between, there is tons of in-betweens we can be present. So for instance, the bathroom. Every time you go to the bathroom, you don't have to think, you don't have to plan, you don't have to talk, you don't have to justify or defend or anything. You can just be present. You're private, it's solitude, it's silent, it's simple. Close your eyes in the shower. It's fabulous.
It's like pee here now.
Yes! I have to write that one down. Exactly, you got it. Clean your teeth. I mean, you can't talk. Just like really be there for the feeling. It's massaging these organs. It's lovely. It's like when you're in a massage. You're not chatting if you've got a good massage therapist. You're thoroughly here. It's so meditative to have a massage. Well, you can massage your gums with the same thing. Just a shower is like a mini massage. Doing things like the dishes. We don't. We're so not there for the dishes. It's so boring, and we do it all the time, and there's nothing going on. So we're thinking, planning, talking. Be there for the dishes. Dish here now. It's lovely, actually. It's soapy and warm, and they get all nice and clean. I mean, there's so much that we miss. So choose a few times when you can really be here. They grow. You discover it. As we become more mindful, when all of these things start becoming interesting and nice. And then the moments when we get lost in conversation are fewer and more, you know, not so nourishing, we find. Okay, so those are those things. Body. Be in your body. Be in your body. Be embodied in your body. As much as you can, as often as you can. It's so helpful. It's the same thing. It's like, okay, because where we are is up and off center usually. We're up in our heads and we're off somewhere. The body is here. Come be home. Your body is home. Come home. Relax. Settle down. Then you can feel it. Then you get to know it. You get to know. It'll tell you when you're getting bushy and you're getting tight and you're getting anxious. You'll feel it. It's really helpful. You don't have to try and remember and figure it out. Your body is telling you. Get very embodied. It's really the first foundation of mindfulness, it's called. Centered, steadied, and energetically tuned in, including breathing, shows you where you're tense, helps you relax. Enjoy it. Fantastic. Hugely important. Be kind. Be gentle. Be tender. We tend to not want that because we're vulnerable, and so we get guarded, and then we get busy and together and all very efficient. But be tender. If you're tender and vulnerable, you know something? I mean, I'm sure you all know this. You've read this 1,000 times. When somebody blushes, particularly a female in the company of a potential mate, it's very attractive. It's a turn-on, apparently. When you feel embarrassed, we hate that we blush. But when we blush, we're actually demonstrating our vulnerability, which is why it's appealing. Be vulnerable. You don't have to be completely together and tough and have a big armor on. It's okay to be sensitive and tender. It's endearing, and it means that actually you have space for someone. We're often so busy trying to be so together that we actually don't actually have space. I'm telling myself that. That's one of my particular things. I'm fine. Be kind. Be tender. Make space. Be gentle with it all, especially when you're struggling. Don't go into aversion for it or anger about it or dread. Just be kind about it. It's hard. Often it's hard being a person, being tender. We have heartbreaks and disappointments. Okay, it really supports meditation, daily meditation. That's maintainable, but it's hard work. It's like doing the dishes every day. But what really supports it is every so often to do intensives, to do some form of retreat. That's the spring cleaning. And it's inspiring, and you learn a lot, and you move forward a lot, you get something a lot, and you get really in the groove of it, and then it's easier to keep going with the meditation. So this is typically, people do a retreat, they're really enthusiastic, they sit every day, then they sit every other day, and then they sit every once a week, and then they don't sit at all, and they go on a retreat, and they sit every day, and that's like pretty common. But it's like any kind of a workshop. You do a workshop, an intensive, and you get really into it. So use retreats that way. And you really do get into it, and you really understand a lot rapidly because, you know, it builds, it has this huge momentum that happens day after day, hour after hour. And you see lots, and you get lots of understanding, and your brain cells are rewired really quite rapidly when it's intensive like that. So I think they're essential. When I first learned Theravadan Buddhism, I was doing those 10-day boot camp retreats with Goenka. They say do 1 hour a day sitting minimum and at least 1 10-day retreat a year. That's some sort of minimum maintenance. So I did. I mean, I was just a good girl, so I did. Sometimes 2 10-days, and it was true. And after a few months, you know, I was just sketchy with my meditation, but I would stay in my body. And then I'd do another retreat and get all inspired again, and that works. It really works. After a while, it's not so sketchy because it's easier. You know, you're more familiar with meditation. You like it. You want to sit. You want a break. Think of your daily sits not as another thing to add to your busy to-do list. Think of it as time out. Don't think of doing anything when you sit. You just, here you are. I'm in my body again. It's breathing. Oh, what a relief. It's your coffee break time. Think of it as a break, a rest, a respite, rather than another task. Because if you add it on, then it's going to lose out with all the other interesting, juicy, compelling things you have to do. But if it's a break and a rest to settle, to calm down, to come back home again, it's your time to be home again, then it's more attractive, I would think. Certainly, I think of it that way. A couple of other little things. This is just, I don't know, at the moment I'm really in this because of my last retreat. I had so much joy the last 2 months I had this retreat in the fall. I think this is great anyway, but at the moment I'm really into it. And that's regularly, oftentimes, count your blessings. When we count our blessings, we're grateful, we're thankful, we're appreciative, we notice the beauty, we feel so cheered up. We feel better, we're more likely to be conscious, to be sane, to be kind to ourselves, to do what we really need rather than another cookie. You know, it's really a good thing. So I don't want to get too preachy about this is what you should be doing, but anyway, I think that's a great thing to do. Anytime, often, just... we're so fortunate. We are so fortunate. We have a human birth. We know about great teachings. We're relatively healthy. We have the time, the energy, the money to be able to take time out. We're not spending all day, every day, dragging around trying to find food and firewood. In the human realm, we have a whole smorgasbord of teachings we can apply. Teachers have come from all kinds. I mean, really. We have partners taking care of business enough that we can come away and leave the cat. I mean, really, we're lucky. Anyway. One more thing. Really, really, goodbye. Happy travels. Travel safely. The Buddha recommended that we live carefully with our integrity. I talked about that when I was talking about the Four Noble Truths in somewhere back there yesterday. There are 5 suggested guidelines for good behavior, which I just want to mention, which are really, really brilliant. Just be careful about them. If we are not careful in the way we live, the way we behave, meditation is harder because we don't want to be with ourselves because we don't feel good. If we behave carefully and kindly and respectfully, it's going to be much easier to meditate. In fact, it's essential. And these are 5. 1 is the umbrella of all of them, which is fantastic. Do no harm. Just try and be conscious. Is what you're doing going to be harming anyone or anything? That's kind of the umbrella for them all. But the other 4 are a bit more specific. The second one is, can you be content with what you have rather than have to take something that isn't actually yours? So this is about stealing, which isn't just like robbing banks and, you know, invading people's homes. It's about, what about taking somebody's time and energy when they haven't got enough for you? You know, you're using their attention because you want it, but they don't actually really have it for you, for instance. It's about respect and not causing harm. But it's about being needy. Can you actually, if you count your blessings, be a little more content and not have to take what's not really being offered? So it's a consideration. This isn't like to lecture you about how to be. It's just tuning into what can cause harm. To take what's not given is actually not very respectful. So energetically, usually, we all know about things. But, you know, being honest about parking tickets and paying taxes and stuff like that, you know, how much are we taking advantage of, you know, trying to get what we don't, you know, deserve or whatever. So cheating things and stuff like that. So just be conscious in that whole arena. That's the second one. Third one is about sexual energy, because it's such a huge thing. And can that, our sexual energy, which is strong, powerful, very profoundly affects all kinds of people, be non-harming, be non-exploitive, non-persuasive, you know, non-deceptive, can be honest. You know, can be upfront, not pretending, oh, I was just playing, I didn't mean I really love you. You know, not trick the partner into believing something that's really, you know, you're kidding, or some those kinds of areas. It isn't about, you know, not having sex or being only getting married first or those kinds of things. That's kind of like way too fixed. More the innuendo around sexual energy, you know. We impose, we barge in on people, you know, because we want them, or we, you know, we find them attractive and we make them feel uncomfortable, or whatever it is. So just sensitivity is huge. It's huge for all of us, always. So being respectful with that whole arena, huge. The next one is about speaking and not harming with our speech. Not being, you know, not being too hasty in passing judgments, not speaking unkindly because you're getting all passionate and carried away and it's in fact offending somebody, not gossiping. One way that I love this is like, how about divisive speech? If you're saying something not so nice about somebody who isn't there, you're actually dividing the person you're telling, you're actually hoping that they will be separated from the one you're talking about. That's called divisive speech. So, you know, if it's not going to be helpful,
Do you have to say it?
There's a lot of BS. I've got a friend on Salt Spring who's a midwife, and she spent several seasons, she went up to northern Quebec to be a midwife in the communities way away up in the Arctic Circle, who otherwise, without midwifery care, the expectant mothers used to have to go 600 miles south and stay in a hotel for 6 weeks till they had their babies, away from their kids and away from their whole life. And so to prevent that, they would send midwives to them every so often. So here she is up with the Inuit, who say about one-tenth of what we say. They just go, yes. Or, I don't think so. And so she found, she said, she was so funny in describing it. She'd be chattering away to them, and they would say, uh-huh. And then she'd just sort of think, like, why did I say all that? And it made her so conscious of just how much rubbish she was pouring out all the time in not essential speech. I mean, partly it's because if you have to live with muffs over your face, you're not going to, you know, you're not going to keep taking the muff off and freezing your lips in order to say some meaningless thing. But anyway, meaningless drivel. My mother used to call it, that's a bunch of meaningless drivel, she'd say. So, like, you know, how meaningful is what you're saying? The Buddha would say, is it helpful? Is it true? And is it timely? That's a good little guideline. It might be true and it might be really helpful, but they might not be able to hear it right then. So anyway, these are just areas to be careful. And then the last one, the fifth one, is what about intoxicants? What's your relationship with intoxicants? You know, and are you using intoxicants at all, or are you using intoxicants to avoid or to connect? Or what is your relationship to intoxicants? Mindfulness is a clear mind, not an intoxicated, confused one. And so there is no hard and fast rule. This is a Unitarian church. It's not like no alcohol, no pot. It's not imposed that way. Yourself, be interested in your mind. What's helping your awareness? What's hindering it? I drink cider and Heineken beer, very light, once in a while, one. I was raised on Bulmer's cider, practically. But just one. I don't like the effect of the alcohol if it affects my mind. I don't like that. I like the taste of the cider. I never did like alcohol. I was a hippie. I got stoned. And then I found myself in my 20s, young, having been stoned at night, and it was all very groovy and musical and the whole deal, and then waking up the next day and wanting to meditate, but I couldn't quite meditate. It was like this blanket over my mind. And when I had not smoked the night before, my mind was pristine in comparison, and I preferred that. So it's for you to have a relationship with this, but be conscious. If we use intoxicants sometimes, for some of us at all, some of us very much, it actually does the opposite of mindfulness. We blurt out what we didn't mean to say, you know, anyway, those are the five precepts. Do no harm. Don't steal anything. Sexually, don't cause harm. With speech, don't cause harm. And watch out for your mind becoming heedless rather than more heedful. It's useful to tune into those. They're really useful. Okay. Somebody asked me this. Where are you? You mentioned somebody asked me to mention this about being sleepy. Did you? Are you Howard? You right? Who?
Norman.
Norman. Right. And you too. So what about being able to meditate and have sleep, you know, when insomnia? A lot of people have sleep troubles, you know, difficulties, or we're stressed out, or we wake up in the night and we're anxious and so on. It's really, really skillful. It's really helpful. If I'm awake at night, I'm meditating. I do it so easily because I've done it so much. I'm just here. I feel my body. I relax what I can relax. I don't go into the worry, oh no, what if I don't get enough sleep, which is the TV. And then it's convincing. I stay in the body. I do a body scan. I stay in bed. You know, I just relax what I can. I adjust my posture. I'm grateful for the comfortable. I've got one of those, on top of the mattresses, one of those memory foam, whatever thingamies they are. And I'm just going, oh, God, I love my bed. And or whatever it is. It's just like I enjoy being in the body, which keeps me down from the anxiety that can come when we're thrashing around at night or worrying. So I do, you know, I'll often move through the body to that scan, the first one I did with you, or the other one is like wishing well and sending wishes, you know, sending good wishes to avoid the trap of getting caught worrying even more and becoming anxious in the night. Those are the main points about being here, being here now. Other questions, anybody? Anything I've not mentioned or that you have found useful for yourselves or you're not sure about something?
Resistance.
It's
a strange thing, and I don't, it's when my practice is starting to slow down, well, why is it starting to slow down? It's usually because I have a loud voice that's saying, oh, what's the point of that, and it becomes this entity unto itself, and how to skillfully work with that so it doesn't win.
The resistance to not sit, to not practice, right? That's a great question. I think that really what's operating there is a lack of faith in the value of sitting. So I would probably say it's the hindrance doubt, which is doubting that it's actually point, you know, you say, what's the point? I'm just going to sit there. I think it's more important to do something else. And so that the faith in the value of it is waning. So that's probably what I would say. And so I would deliberately do some reflecting about, so what are the values of this? What have I found for myself, the help and the value of sitting? And just remember them again and recall them. What insights have you had? What modifications to your behavior or your speech have you experienced? Even if it's an instant, just a one time, that I know was because I had some mindfulness. And so you're actually you're taking out your jewelry, the jewels of practice, and polishing them up and really appreciating them again to remind you, yeah, this is why I do it. So it shifts your relationship to why you would do it. It gives you fuel to do it because it's boring and it's not comfortable and it's not the way of the material world and why we need lots of support for it, until you get on another retreat, which will convince you again that, oh yeah, of course this is fabulous, then you need to call on your own jewels of practice. That's what I would do. Remember your insights. In a moment you've had any kind of a flash of anything, like recall it. You don't have to have it written down in a book. Just like, oh yeah, I remember that moment when I could have done this and instead I did that. I was Carol's mother instead of getting mad at the teller, and it was brilliant. And it felt so good. Or I did something, reflect. The Buddha suggests you reflect on your goodness. So I was actually, you know, I helped that woman with that bag of groceries that time. And it felt great. It's the good stuff of me. That's what matters. So some way reorient yourself to prioritize the values, which is what brought you into meditation in the beginning. That's what I would say. Like call up some of that, which is fuel for the journey. Because bye. Hope he goes well tonight, Kevin. Take care. Yeah, that's being wise about it. Because it's going to happen. And that's when you listen to a Dharma talk, or that's when you listen and read a book, or you need inspiration. Because it's lost its meaning. It's just ho-hum. And, you know, so some way it's got to be revitalized. Retreats are the best for it, but talks are great, and books, and talking to other people, and those kinds of things. Yeah. And you need to get it from other people when you don't have it sometimes. So you need to be around somebody who's enthusiastic again, and it really affects you, you know. Yeah. Okay? Please.
What would be a good take to get you, before meditating, to inspire you?
I mean, there's just thousands of them. Yeah. Really, there are thousands. So I'm going to go to resources now, but let me just see if there's another question in the back. Yes, hi. So, yeah, so support resources. So I'm going to now talk about some of the resources around here and ways to get that, because you all need that, you know. So we need company. There's a sitting group. Kevin tonight, who just left, who is sitting back here, is giving a talk tonight on intention at the sitting group, which is 7 o'clock every Sunday night in Victoria. I encourage you to go. Drop in. And somebody gives some kind of teachings. Often it's a taped thing. Sometimes somebody will read something. Somebody will give a talk. Occasionally I'm there, and so on. Sometimes there's visiting other teachers, and so on. So it's great. There are other sitting groups around Victoria also. Now, I'm not so familiar as some of you are with the website, but Victoria Insight Meditation Society is who this group is, right? Who are the council of that? Would you just like stand up and be noticed? Is Bruce and Joan mostly here now, right? Just the two of you. Right. So who, none of them are here today. So there's a group of people who call themselves, they're the council of this Victoria Insight. And the website, did most of you register through to this on the website? Does anybody not know that website? So that's your way in. And so on the website, are there, Joan, other sitting groups or contacts or things like that, activities or... Is it on the website? On the website. There you go. So contact people that way for local activities. There's a newsletter that comes out on the website for other things and events. So there's that.
There's also a newsletter that you get on the...
If you join up.
If you join up, you'll get a weekly newsletter as to what's going on and what retreats make people
for. And that's all by going on that website, which is great. And through that website, there are links to other websites. For instance, there's a link through that one to the website where I am, which is ssivipassana.org, Salt Spring Island Vipassana website, where you can see, for instance, where I am and where I'm teaching and what's going on Salt Spring and other retreats and other teachers and that kind of thing.
And a lot of the recordings, the study group.
Right, are also available. So on my website, right? Or on the...
They're
okay. Once a month, I come here, mostly me, occasionally I'm away, and then someone else does it. Once a month, we meet the second Sunday of the month at the same yoga studio where the sitting is on a Sunday night, Bay and Shakespeare. And we have what we call a study group, and we study some aspect of the practice a little more in depth. And I give homework, and we have notes, and we discuss together what happened last time, and just I teach a little more in depth, and so it makes it more interesting. Anyone can come anytime, drop in, join up, not do the homework, it doesn't matter, do the homework, it's another. And the talks that I give each one of those Sundays is also available on the website. And there are links to the talks which I give elsewhere on the website. And also there are links to other centers where they do retreats. There are this book lists, recommended books. It's all available if you go on to the website. There's a fantastic link which is there, which is Dharma Seed. Dharma is spelled D-H-A-R-M-A, DharmaSeed, one word, .org. And there are thousands of downloadable Dharma talks with thousands of teachers. Fantastic. So you can just go scanning through there, titles or names, or just see what catches your fancy, and you can download them or stream them onto the iPod. There you have them when you're jogging along. They're just so accessible. And there's also another center which has got a teacher who I really, really like, and it's called Insight. It's called Audio Dharma, same spelling of Dharma, but with audio. AudioDharma.org. He's a teacher called Gil Fronsdal. He lives in the Bay Area. And he's got hundreds and hundreds of great talks on there. A lot of his and then visiting teachers. Once you start Googling and searching Vipassana or Theravada or Insight, you'll get carried away. Into the TV, you'll go. Okay, but use the resources because there's amazing resources and great. And lots of interesting books and so on and so forth. So, my book list is out of date. There's been some wonderful books printed since my... So I must update my book list. But all the books that are on my list are good books anyway, and all available. So, but there are always more. Okay. Any other questions about any of that?
What was your website?
SSI, which is short for Salt Spring Island, vipassana.org. ssivipassana.org. And through there, you can also click on contact, and you can contact the registrar for retreats, and you can contact me, teacher Heather Martin. If you want to make contact with me, you can do it that way. And I do talk to people on the phone, sometimes occasionally, sometimes regularly. Can I give some of the last words to Hafiz? This is what Hafiz says about meditation. Just sit there. Right now, don't do a thing, just rest. For your separation from God, or the truth, is the hardest work in this world. Let me bring you trays of food and something that you like to drink. You can use my soft words as a cushion for your head. It's our confusion that's the work. Resting in the present does not work. It's just home again. Two others. This is about the precepts and our behavior. Every time a man or woman upon the path does not keep his or her word, angels grumble and have to remove a few of the bets they had placed on his heart to win. That's sweet. I love that. And, oh yeah, this is the last one. Oh, this is so sweet. This is what happens. As we get more wise, we get more kind. This, and of course, he uses the word God, but God is could mean, you know, the truth of things, the Dharma, the Great Spirit, whatever. This path to God made me such an old sweet beggar. I was starving until one night my love, meaning God, tricked God himself to fall into my bowl. That's how awakening happens. It's just like, whoa. Now Hafiz is infinitely rich, but all I ever want to do is keep emptying out my emerald-filled pockets upon this tear-stained world. It isn't a thing we get or we can keep. It's like all we then do is want to be more and more giving and loving. It's so beautiful. So this is the last. It's funny. So the sense of the separation from God, if you like, that is the sense of ego, the sense of your self-concern, that, you know, where we get all so bound up. The only problem with not castrating a gigantic ego is that it will surely become amorous and father 100 screaming ideas and kids who will then all quickly grow up and skillfully proceed to run up every imaginable debt and complication of which your brain can conceive. This would concern normal parents and any seekers of freedom and the local merchants nearby as well. They could very easily become forced to disturb your peace. All those worries and bills would turn to wailing ghosts. The only problem with not lassoing a runaway ego is you won't have much desire to sing in this sweet world. So let's lasso those egos and sing, shall we? Okay, so what I'd like us to do is to stand in a big circle. Leave the chairs, just somehow manage with the chairs. We can see each other more or less. Hello, everybody. Now you can look at each other full on, everybody. It's quite a big bunch of us. So, to everybody, on all of your behalfs, I would like to thank each of you. Because without each other, you wouldn't have stayed here. If you were here all alone, just you and me, forget it. And so we need each other to hold each other up. So thank you from all of you to all of you. I like to end these retreats. I mean, and I have my thanks. I have my thanks to, well, the people who make these things happen, who invite me, who organize it. But I also really thank you for caring enough to want to be here with yourself and learn how to become even more beautiful than you were, because you already are. We just don't realize our goodness. So thank you for your practice. Thank you for your interest. This is on behalf of every creature in the world who's going to benefit from your practice. So what we do to end this, I like to do this, is just think that. How you behave, how you think, how you feel leaks out of you. Whether you want to or not, you are creating an energy field that affects everything else. If you help that field in you become a little kinder, a little more understanding, and all these things, every being elsewhere is benefiting. Let's remember, and let's do our practice as consistently as we can for everything's benefit. We'll benefit our spouses, our neighbors, our kids. Everybody benefits, even if we can't tell when or how. We dedicate these 2 days of being together to help our beautiful world. May there be less suffering, less squabbling, less confusion. May there be lots more understanding, happiness, joking, lightheartedness, ease, all good things. We dedicate our practice for all of this. Lovely. Ring the bell. Many blessings. Look forward to seeing you somewhere.